balls or not. He takes my hand and places it on his cock. Blue or not, I need to get you home now. The ride is fast, but not fast enough. I consider giving him a blowjob while he drives, but DC cops fill the streets with their vehicles, and I don't want to waste time explaining to an officer how I was looking for my contacts down his pants, even though I don't wear contacts. We barely make it inside the door of my apartment before Andy cups my face and kisses me so tenderly I begin to melt.
Kate, I don't think I could ever love someone as much as I'm in love with you.
The intensity in his gaze has me paralyzed. I begin to open my mouth to speak, but he's there with a fiery kiss that weakens my knees. His hands skate down to the buttons on my blouse, and I'm almost ready to tell him to rip it off with how badly I want him inside me. I shrug out of my coat and toss it somewhere into the room as he makes quick work of divesting me of my top. When he releases the last of the buttons, he slowly pushes the shirt down my arms. When it reaches my wrists, he pulls the ends of the blouse together. Caged in, with my hands behind my back, I have no idea what he's up to.
You stay right here while I worship you.
I feel the fabric tighten around my wrists right before he slides down the length of my body. His palms glide up my thighs, pushing up my skirt. Belatedly, I wish I'd worn garters tonight. Then again, I didn't have plans to see him until after I got home. His heated breath skims my skin before I feel his tongue through the fabric of my thong. I lift a leg and lean back on the door to gain leverage to press myself against his eager mouth. He hooks a hand under my knee and settles it over his shoulder. When he pulls the fabric apart, leaving me exposed, my other leg gives out. I begin to slide down the door. He stops my progress by hooking my other leg over his shoulder. He moves forward, so my back is as close to flush with the door as can be, with my hands in the way. I need to touch you, I call out.
In a minute,
he hurriedly says, slipping a finger and curling it to stroke my G-bell. My legs begin to shake from the force of the orgasm building inside me. Andy, I breathe, don't stop. He slips another finger inside and finger fucks me until I explode around him. I'm boneless as he frees my hands. He lifts me in the air and carries me back to the bedroom.
Don't leave me yet, Kate. I'm not done with you.
After I make contact with the mattress, I hear the rustle of fabric while I explore the back of my eyelids.
Kate,
he breathes, covering me with his magnificent body. Please, I beg.
Shit, Kate.
I need you now. Make love to me. There is no doubt in my mind I see stars as he slips into me. My back rises off the bed as it feels like heaven, like home. Nothing in so long has felt this right. I love you. I breathe as he begins to move. Something breaks in my chest as he drives into me with so much passion. I feel his love in every stroke. A tear falls from my eye, and I know there is no turning back. This man is mine, and I am his. He doesn't ask if I'm on the pill, and had I not been, I would be ready to make babies with him. When his name slips off my tongue, it surprises us both. I call him Drew as he climaxes on a growl of pleasure. My vision explodes with a million stars. We settle back on the mattress, and he threads his fingers through mine. Tears slip out the corners of my closed eyes because my emotions are raw, and I've admitted the truth I've been holding back. Chapter 26, Past. Coming back from our own little paradise is harsh. I shouldn't complain because life is pretty damn good. We live in a fabulous home. Drew loves his fellowship and the attendings he works with, and my new job is great. I landed an entry-level auditing position with Ernst & Young. It's not my dream job, but with my ambition and goals, I can see myself making partner one day. If not here, then another firm. Every day, though, I find myself daydreaming of our little villa on the sea and how Monique and the rest of the staff spoiled us. The summer ends and fall is upon us before it barely registers. One day at my new job, a huge flower arrangement is delivered for me. I scratch my head, wondering if Drew is trying to apologize for something. But that's silly because the man never does anything to piss me off. Then I open the card and feel my heart beat a little faster as it thumps a lot louder.
Kate, Caitlin, my lovely wife, happy anniversary. 2 years ago, you agreed to go out on a date with me, and you changed my life. Without you, I would be less than a man, because that fist-sized thing that beats in my chest only beats because of you. I love all the pieces of you with all the pieces of me. Forever yours, Drew.
I hug his note to my chest and smile. Thinking back to that day, I laugh a little because I thought he was so old. He was 27 then, and I called him smoking hot. And he was, and still is.
Flowers, huh?
A voice says over my shoulder. I turn to see my boss, Joseph, standing there. Yeah, they're from my husband.
He likes to spoil you, I see.
I beam. He sure does. Joseph smiles and then moves toward his office. I'm in a cubicle the size of a shoebox. There are about 24 on this floor. When I stand, I have a perfect view of the cubicle C. After Joseph leaves, I hear, "So, Drew sent you flowers. What's the occasion?" It's my cube neighbor, Nan. I like to call her Nosy Nan. She knows everything that goes on here, and then some. I hug Drew's note tighter to my chest, afraid she'll be able to read it with X-ray vision or something. No occasion. He's just attentive. If I could be so lucky, she sighs. I wonder if her luck, or lack of it, has anything to do with the fact that she sticks her nose into everybody's business. I can already hear Drew telling me to be nice, so I switch my thoughts back to the audit I'm working on. My phone buzzes. It's Drew texting me. Drew.
Happy anniversary.
Me. Thanks for the flowers. They're magnificorgeous. Drew.
That's not a word, Kate.
Me. It is now. Drew.
You like?
Me. Nope. I love. Drew.
Score. How about dinner tonight? Fig?
Me. Time? Drew.
Right after work to save us a drive. 6:30?
Me. Perf. Love you. Drew.
Love you.
Dinner is awesome, but it always is at Fig, one of my favorite restaurants downtown. That night when we get home, I think the flowers were sent to seduce me, because Drew doesn't even give me a chance to get in the house. He opens my car door and kisses me. The silk blouse I wear magically disappears. My bra gets unhooked by the time we hit the door, and the kitchen counter becomes our bed. He doesn't give me time to think, only feel. His hands and mouth are magic, but they always are. By the time we both come, our breathing sounds like we just ran home instead of drove. All of a sudden, Drew gets hit with a coughing spell. It's unusual, and I become alarmed. Of course, anything that happens to Drew alarms me. He could stub his pinky toe and I'd freak. He accuses me of being too overprotective, but that's what happens when the man you love has been through a bout with cancer. He finally stops, but his eyes are watery and his nose runs. Are you okay?
Yeah, it was a wicked tickle in my throat. Maybe it's ragweed allergies or something.
I hope it's the ragweed and not the or something. Maybe. Want some water?
No, I'm good now.
It starts to happen off and on. Not a whole lot, but enough to send up a warning signal. It's about 3 weeks after the first episode, and I say, do you think you should talk to your doctor? He sighs.
My next round of scans is next week.
Your next round of scans?
Yeah, they always do a 6-month follow-up after everything. Mine are next week.
I swallow. And you were gonna tell me when? He stands and moves to sit next to me. He takes my hands and says,
I was gonna tell you next week, Kate. I didn't want you to get your panties, unders, in a wad over this. It's gonna be fine.
Drew, we're in this together. I'm going with you. I see him reach for patience.
Kate, all you'll do is sit and wait.
I don't care. I'm going with you. I think you're missing something out of this equation here. You plus me equals us. No arguing. He sighs.
Okay.
What kinds of scans?
Bone and PET.
What day?
Wednesday.
Okay, I'll tell Joseph. On Wednesday, we have the scans. The waiting is the worst. Only we find out real fast because of Drew's position at the hospital. The news isn't good. There's a reason for the cough. We sit across from the head oncologist in Drew's department. He shuffles the papers and looks up at us.
Drew, Kate, I'm sorry. You have Mets to the right lung.
I don't know what that means. Mets to the lung? Drew squeezes my hand. He sounds weary when he says,
It's metastasized to my lung, Kate.
Fuck, the lung? How did that happen? I thought it was gone. The oncologist, Dr. Rosenberg, leans forward and says,
Unfortunately, Kate, it only takes one cell to break away, and that's what happened in Drew's case.
So now what? I ask.
We have Drew up for our tumor board on Friday. Drew, do you want to attend? Yes, since it's my treatment plan you'll be discussing.
Dr. Rosenberg shifts in his seat, then glances at me. Just say it. I'm in this as much as he is. Dr. Rosenberg presses his lips together for a minute.
True. You and I have already had this discussion, and I won't sugarcoat anything with you. Kate, is that how you want things too?
As much as it will hurt to hear, I say, yes.
Okay. Drew's type of cancer is more difficult to treat in his age group. Now that it's metastasized, the odds of a cure have dropped even further. We're gonna press ahead with everything we've got. But of course, part of his treatment will have to include another round of chemo and surgery. We're not sure yet if we'll add radiation. There is a possibility of some experimental drugs, but I'm not sure at this point, hence the tumor board on Friday.
My body feels numb, and I can't begin to imagine how Drew feels. Just a few weeks ago, everything seemed so great. How could it be so bad? Then I flash back to these same words I said when his initial diagnosis first came about. I realize nothing's fair in life. Abso-fucking-lutely nothing. Drew is quiet, as am I. Finally, Dr. Rosenberg breaks the giant iceberg of silence.
Do either of you have any questions?
No. I say, stone-faced. The only question I want to ask is why can't you cure my husband? Then he says to Drew,
I'll see you Friday at 7.
We walk out, and I'm not sure what to think. But Drew, my precious Drew, does it all for me.
Kate, look at me.
He stops and takes me into a small room of some kind.
It's going to be fine. You're going to be fine.
My mouth works over 1,000 things I want to say, but nothing comes out. He presses me into the hard wall of his chest, and I wonder how something so ugly and horrific can be grown inside such a perfect human being. I'm so scared, Drew. I don't want to be. I want to be strong for you, strong to carry you through this. But here I am, the biggest chicken shit on earth.
How can you not be scared? I'm scared too, but we're in great hands here.
Should we go back to Indy? He pulls my face away from him so he can look at me.
Listen up. At the tumor board on Friday, the team from Indy will be video conferenced in, along with some guru from Sloan Kettering.
A coughing fit breaks into his conversation. When it ceases, he wipes his eyes and carries on, covering up the severity of it. My heart squeezes in fear.
I think Rosenberg is also tagging some guy from MD Anderson. I can't get better care anywhere, Kate, I promise.
Okay, if you're good with it, so am I. Several deep breaths later, and we're heading out to the car. My arm is wrapped around his waist, hugging him tightly to my side. Friday rolls around, and I wait to hear from Drew. The call doesn't come until almost noon.
Sorry, babe, I was poked, prodded, questioned. My results were reviewed. And quite frankly, I'm not sure I want to talk about it.
He sounds fatigued. Want to wait until I get home?
Yeah. Do you mind?
No. As long as you snuggle with me.
Always.
On the way home, I pick up Drew's favorite pizza and a six-pack of his favorite IPA beer. When I get home, he's lying on the couch asleep in the den, the TV on. I almost break down in tears looking at him, because right now he looks so robust and healthy. I can't imagine he has cancer in his lungs. Sitting on the couch next to him, I put my head on his chest and wrap my hand around his neck. I know it'll wake him, but I don't care. I don't want either of us to ever sleep again and waste precious moments we could spend together.
I've always loved waking up to you.
I've always loved sleeping with you. By that, I mean making love and not actually sleeping.
Funny.
I brought dinner home.
That's nice.
He yawns.
I'm not particularly hungry, though.
I lean back and inspect him. Did an alien beam down from space and invade Drew McKnight's body? Not hungry. He half smiles. My attempt at amusing him is an epic failure. I'm sorry, we don't have to eat. We don't have to do anything. We can just lie here all night and not even talk if that's what you want.
Kate, that's not fair to you. You need to know the plan.
I tow off my shoes and stretch out on top of him. Shoot.
Tuesday morning, I go in for round one of chemo. Different drugs, same side effects.
I grab his face and say, you good with this?
Yeah.
Okay. Then what?
We do 3 rounds, then surgery. But this time, we'll do bang, bang, bang.
Meaning? I ask.
No time off in between.
Ouch. That's rough. That means he'll debilitate. With 0 time off, it won't give him much time to regroup and gain his appetite back. That's rough, Drew.
I know. They know it. But they think I'm hardy enough, and it gives me the very best fighting chance, and I have to take it.
Okay, I'm with you. Are the drugs as harsh?
Yeah, but the doses will be different, and they'll add more protective measures to make sure I don't get neutropenic and such.
Okay.
Then PET scans, and if they lack the progression of the shrinkage, then surgery.
He's tempering his Greek, because I understand these terms, when usually I don't. This tells me he really doesn't want to talk much more about it, and I'm good with that. 3 weeks later, Drew is down 25 pounds and feels like hell. I bring him milkshakes, ice cream from his favorite ice cream shop, sundaes, cake, brownies, chocolate chip cookies, you name it, to try to get some pounds back on him, but eating is a huge problem. He's nauseated all the time. The drugs they give him to prevent it don't seem to be that effective. Ben, bless him, scores some weed, and that helps the most. Plus, it has the added benefit of stimulating his appetite. At first, I worry it will hurt his lungs, but Drew, in his dry, humorous way, looks at me and says,
"What, Kate? Worried I might get cancer?"
And what can I say to that? He finally seems to be turning in the right direction. The doctors won't even consider surgery until they can get his strength up. So Ben comes over every night, and they smoke and get high. And by high, I mean completely stoned. Drew eats, and Ben and I laugh because Drew is freaking hilarious. He comes up with the craziest shit, like telling us we're gonna plant asparagus in the backyard instead of grass. Then we'll just mow it down once a week and have dinner afterwards. Ben and I try to convince him it won't work, but he has it all planned out in his head that it will. One night, we're all sitting around, and my mom decides to pay us a surprise visit. Drew, who is stoned as hell, pulls out his pipe and offers my mother a hit off it. Ben almost falls out of his chair, and I have to drag my mother in the kitchen and explain things to her. Kate, I am aware of the medical uses of marijuana. I didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday, you know. I did smoke the stuff when I was in college. I didn't know that, Mom, but, thanks for sharing. Jeez. Talk about a shocker. I can't conjure up an image of my mom taking a hit off a bong for the life of me. By the way, Kate, where did Drew get his pot from? Oh my God, Mom, I can't believe you just asked me that. She shrugs. Well, you never know if you'll ever need it. When I tell Ben what she said, he dies laughing again.
Oh God, the picture of your mom hitting the pipe is just too good. Kate, we need to get her high with us.
Ben Rhodes, that is a big negative. Drew chuckles.
Oh, Kate, I think she'd get so into it.
Most likely. You two are terrible. I shake my head at them and leave the two of them alone. Ben is good for Drew. He gets his mind off things and relaxes when Ben is around. And Ben is coming around a whole lot these days. The following week, Drew's doctors deem him strong enough and ready for the surgery. The limbo I've been surviving in ends much too abruptly for my liking, but Drew is ready to get the dog and pony show on the road, as he says. Are you scared? I ask him the night before.
Not of the procedure itself. I've been through it once, so I know what to expect. I'm afraid they'll either find more inside than the scan showed, or they won't be able to grab it all.
I'll be brave for the both of us. I tell him, which is a big, fat lie. I'm so afraid I can't eat or sleep. In the morning, we arrive at the hospital, and things run as expected. My support team is there. Ben, Jenna, my parents, and Drew's parents. Jenna holds my hand the whole time during the 5-hour surgery, and Ben never sits down. As close as Jenna and I are, Ben and I have really bonded over the last month or so. He is every bit as worried and scared as I am. I glance at Letty and Ray, and my heart plunges into my guts. I can't imagine being in their shoes, having your only child go through cancer treatment like this. A sudden urge hits me, and I run to Letty and throw myself at her, burying my face in her lap, my arms wrapped around her. She must think I'm a lunatic, but I can't help myself. Her arms wrap around me, and we try to comfort each other. I'm not even sure how long we stay like this, but eventually Drew's surgical team makes an appearance. Dr. Rosenberg also shows up, which is weird. This can't be good. The head surgeon, Dr. Sherman, leads the talk.
Surgery went well. Drew's in recovery, and he'll be fine. We had to take the entire lung. It was peppered with meds. When we got into the lobe we thought was affected, we decided to check further, and it soon became clear that we were dealing with a more aggressive situation here. We also had to resect more bone than we initially thought, so now it's a wait and see.
So he can live with one lung, right? I may sound stupid, but I don't know these things.
Oh yeah, he'll adapt. Most people only use a percentage of their lung capacity as it is.
Oh, okay. And what about more chemo? Dr. Rosenberg says,
we're going to have to switch that again, since we didn't get the results we sought, but we'll discuss that after Drew recovers. Our goal now is to get him healed up after the surgery and out of the hospital.
All of us, Ben, Letty, my parents, Jenna, and myself, look like deer in the headlights. Everyone except Ray. Being a doctor, he knows what's going on. He gets it. But I don't want to ask, because I want to bury my head in the sand and pretend none of this happened. When can we see him? Dr. Sherman says,
my recommendation is that you all go home and rest. Tomorrow morning will be soon enough. He won't wake up for hours, and when he does, he'll still be sedated.
I remember that from the last time. Can I at least look at him? Dr. Sherman and Ray share a look. Ray says,
Kate, he'll be on a ventilator. It might be better.
I cut him off. I don't care. I just want to kiss him and touch his face. Tell him I love him. Then I'll leave. Dr. Sherman says,
that should be fine. Ray, Kate, Letty, why don't you come with me?
He leads the way and we go into recovery. I'm shocked to see the tube going down Drew's throat, but I refuse to let it show. I place my hand on his head and my cheek next to his for a moment. Then I tell him how much I love him and kiss his cheek. Letty does the same, followed by Ray. When we get back to the waiting room, the tears I pushed away eke past my lids, but I won't give in. Not yet. I hug Letty and Ray and my parents. Then I turn to Jenna and Ben and ask, you guys are staying with me, right? Yep. And we head home, where I proceed to digest everything and then break down. Kate, maybe they got it all. They had to take out his whole lung, Jenna. His prognosis wasn't good to start. Jenna grabs my shoulders. Stop it. Stop saying that. I'm hoping for the best, but expecting the worst. It's the only way I know to prepare, because you can't possibly understand what this man means to me.
She's right, Jenna. And I know Kate.
We both look at Ben, and if eyes could speak a million words, his would do so right now. The grief written in them is so poignant, I automatically reach for him, and we cling to each other.
Drew told me that this was a roulette game, and we all know the odds of that.
Then I feel his body shaken with silent sobs, and mine does the same thing. The next morning, we make an impressive team as we head back to the hospital. Fake smiles and chipper faces are all nothing but plastic. But Drew won't notice, because he'll be drugged out of his mind, and until he does, we'll put on the best show as we possibly can. This time, when I see him with all the hoses, tubes, wires, and IV lines, I'm not nearly as shaken up. I know what to expect, and I've prepared myself. His morphine pump is next to his bed, and he gives me a wan smile. Thank God they've taken him off that ventilator, and he's breathing on his own. Hey, gorgeous, I say, kissing him. Love your tubes. You have the best tubes I've ever seen.
You really know how to flatter a guy.
He sounds so breathless. Is that normal? I want to ask him, but I don't want to freak the hell out of him. It's the way I work. Is it dumb to ask you how you feel?
No, there is no such thing as a dumb question.
Oh, yes, there is, and I've heard many. But how are you, my love? If I could do anything, anything at all, it would be to take his pain and suffering away right this very instant. Instead, I run my hand over his smooth head, bald from his last round of chemo, and my assistants at Shaven.
Much better with you by my side. Have I told you how beautiful you are?
Not today.
I just did then. And I love you.
His eyes flutter closed. I place my face next to his and kiss his cheek. Then I tell him in his ear how very much I love him too. After a moment, I stand and walk out of the room so I can get my cry on. And it's a doozy. As I'm in the hall, Ben comes out and envelops me into a hug.
You okay?
Yeah, I needed to get away from him so I could cry.
He's out of it, Kate.
Yeah, but I still want him to see me as Wonder Woman or something.
That's ridiculous. He knows you're not. He knows if anything happens, you'll need the support of friends.
Ben, has he said anything to you about not making it?
No. He doesn't know. No one does, Kate.
I don't think his doctors are very hopeful. Ben leans against the wall and stretches his arms up, dropping his head down between them. Suddenly, he slams his hands against the wall and yells, "God damn it!" I get ready to tell him to hush, but a nurse beats me to it. "Sir, please, this is a hospital, and I would respectfully ask you to refrain from yelling and from using that type of language. We have sick patients and their families here." Ben straightens up and walks up to the nurse and says,
"Yeah? Well, my best friend for my entire life is in there and just had his lung ripped out his chest because he has cancer. This is his wife right here, and I apologize to you and everyone else, but we're a little upset. Sorry for the bad language, but..."
Ben throws his hands up in the air, and he turns to me as racking sobs take over him. When I see him like that, I turn into a weepy mess myself. Jenna shows up and tells us we need to take it somewhere else. But quite frankly, I just don't give a fuck anymore. Ben and I stand there, and after a time, we let each other go. He looks at me and asks,
"You good?"
"For now. You?"
"Same. Ready to go back in?"
"Yeah." He holds out his hand, and we take the next steps together. As the day progresses, Ben and I have more than a few crying spells, but we lean on each other for support. The morphine keeps Drew's pain at bay, but his head fuzzy. The thing about his breathing is freakish. He's so out of it, I can't ask him anything. Bray says it's his diaphragm and it's fine, but it's not fine. My husband is getting taken apart piece by piece, and it's killing me slowly as I watch it happen. I never thought about families of cancer survivors and what they go through, but it's not for the faint of heart. Another week passes, and Drew finally gets discharged from the hospital. His spirits are up, and he's eaten again, too. After a few days, he says they're going to have another tumor board, and he wants to attend. That means I have to take him since he hasn't been cleared by his physician to drive. Do you want me to go too?
You can, but I doubt you'll want to because it might be all gibberish to you.
I can sit in the corner and read a good book. He laughs nervously. Spit it out, McKnight. I know when you're hiding something.
The news won't be good, Kate.
His voice is clear and strong. Remember, no sugarcoating. I remind him.
So here's the thing. They originally thought the cancer was confined to one lobe, but when they found it scattered throughout my whole lung, well, you can probably guess what I'm going to say.
My hands are fisted so tightly, my nails pierce my palms. Don't make me guess. I need it spelled out, Drew. I'm not a doctor and don't know these things.
The lungs are a secondary point.
Meaning?
If it's there, it's most likely someplace else.
Such as?
The liver.
Heart, meat, stomach, meat, floor. Stomach, meat, throat, meat, mouth. I run to the bathroom and make it just in time. After I finish my puke fest, I wipe my mouth and rinse it out. Then I think about what he said. The liver. Well, I'm not a smart woman medically. I do know this. The liver usually spells out terminally ill. Drew is telling me he's terminal. Fuck. Suck it up, Kate. Get out there now because he needs you. I look in the cabinet since I'm not in my bathroom upstairs, and thank God there's mouthwash in here. I rinse again and walk out the door.
You okay?
Yeah, well, could be better. What now? More tests?
That, and we determine if treatment is even an option anymore.
I press my lips together, doing my dead level best to hold in my tears. Nodding, I finally squeak. And you're sure there's nowhere else we can go?
I'm positive, Kate. It's the disease, not the institution.
I stand there, looking at the floor, and I hold out my arms so he can walk into them and not see me cry. God bless him, he figures me out. I drive Drew to the hospital, but give him the respect he deserves and don't stay for the tumor board. He calls an hour and a half later, and I meet him in Dr. Rosenberg's office. They decide another round of chemo with an experimental drug added to the protocol. This will go on for 2 months. If no improvement is seen, then that's it. They've reached the end of the road. Christmas is next week, and we have no tree or decorations. After moving into the house, I was all gangbusters because I knew this would be the perfect home for the holidays. There are a couple of rooms that would be great for Christmas trees, but now I'm pretty sure we won't have that. Drew doesn't start chemo until January, and I have a moment of inspiration. I get online and check things out. Then I make a call to Letty and pull her in to my surprise, and then Ben. They're 100% on board. My last holdout is Dr. Rosenberg. When I speak to him, he's a go-to. So 2 days after Christmas, I pack a bag for us and I tell him I have a surprise. We get in the car and drive to the airport. When we get there, he sees our destination is Chicago. He wants to know what's going on. I only jiggle my brows.
What have you done, Kate?
Oh, I don't know. The corner of his mouth curls and I can see his wheels spinning.
You haven't done what I think you have.
And what might that be?
Blackhawk tickets.
I grin, and the look I receive is like sunbeams bursting through a storm. If I could capture it on film and save it to my own personal hard drive forever, I would die a happy woman. Drew McKnight is the happiest I've seen in weeks and weeks, and I know I've made the best decision to make this trip. The 3-day jaunt to Chicago is amazing, and it changes Drew, if only for that short period of time. It's like we went back to those days in our sweet little villa by the sea. We were happy, and nothing gets in the way of it, not even the looming monster of cancer. Unfortunately, it doesn't last because we have to come home. But damn, it's been so worth it. January, chemo cranks back up, and ironically, it's not as bad as the last rounds. Drew has been in some pain recently, which makes me anxious, but the chemo knocks it right out, and he tolerates it well. Other than the hair being gone, which neither of us gives a shit about, he's holding his own. That's not to say all is great. He's dropping weight. It's not a huge amount, but it's a pound or so every week. I have to buy him new clothes because he can't wear his old ones anymore. He gives me an apologetic grin.
Maybe I should just stick to sweats with elastic. Then I wouldn't have to worry about it.
Drew, don't be silly. He's lying on the couch, and I slide up next to him and hug him. It's sad to feel how much muscle is no longer there. It's the wasting away thing that you hear about.
I'm nothing but a sack of bones, Kate.
You've lost weight, but we'll fatten you back up.
I love your positive attitude.
Drew, you have to have one, too. He tilts his head and stares for a minute. What?
My scans came back today.
Blue eyes, overcast with sadness, gut me. Shit, 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 shit. Chapter 27. Present. The light coming through my window is hazy and gray. Clouds thick with frozen moisture loom above D.C., putting the brakes on everything as the city waits with bated breath to see if the possible storm will materialize. As much as I hate to say it, you should get home, or you'll be stuck here with me for the foreseeable future.
Not a bad thing.
Andy tugs my back closer to his chest. We both know the hospital will need you.
Maybe I need you more.
His words light a fire in my heart. I'm beginning to need him like I need food to survive. Andy, I begin. He groans.
For the record, I hate that we live so far apart. I'm getting used to waking up with you. We should think about getting a place together, somewhere halfway between there and here.
My mouth goes dry. What are you saying? He turns me around so that I'm facing him.
I'm saying I want us to share space. I'm saying that I need you, Kate. We've spent enough time apart.
I place my finger on his cheek and begin to trace the line of his cheekbone. No one knows we're together yet. My parents, yours, Ben. He sighs.
I know. Maybe we should tell them when we go home for Christmas. You are going home?
I nod. As much as I don't want to and deal with the questions and possible hurt feelings, I have to face that reality if I plan to be with him. And I'll have to go back to calling him Drew. I'm not sure I'm ready for that either. The bubble wrap we've created around our relationship will finally pop. I am. When are you planning to go down? He shrugs.
I'm not sure. I'm asking because I thought maybe I could drive you down or back, if not both, depending on our schedules.
I'm planning to take the week, not much more.
Okay. I'll see what days I can get off. And there's something we should discuss later.
I rise up on an elbow. Tell me now. Curiosity makes me feel like a kid at Christmas. He shakes his head.
I have to leave, and this is something we need to talk about. But before I go...
His hand snakes down the sides of my body. When he reaches my hip, one hand moves to my center to test the moisture levels. My climate is ripe for the taking, and boy does he take me. When he finally leaves the bed for the shower, I watch his perfect body with awe. He's always been a specimen to behold. As his backside disappears into my bathroom, I hustle out after him. By the time he leaves for Baltimore, snow is starting to fall steadily. Nervous about the weather, I wait on pins and needles until he calls to let me know he got home safely. The rest of my Sunday is spent taking care of the little things, like cleaning up and laundry, because I'll be busy soon. I start a new engagement on Monday. The offices where I'll be working the next few weeks are located on the other side of the Potomac, in Old Town, Alexandria, Virginia. It will just put more distance between Andy and me. I have to seriously consider a move so that we are closer together, because waking up without him bothers me too. The amount of snow we've gotten before the official start of winter has all the news organizations talking on Monday morning. It's one of the reasons I didn't go home for Thanksgiving. That, and I wanted to spend it with Andy. It was a quiet affair, the two of us cooking a dinner for the both of us. He got called into the hospital once. He wasn't gone that long. Otherwise, we spent the weekend together, and it was really nice. It made me want what he was offering that much more. I sit in my living room, enjoying a leisurely cup of coffee. Our offices are closed again today because the storm hit us head on. The federal government is closed, and that means D.C. is practically shut down. Many businesses follow the feds as a rule for office closings, because the feds rarely do, since D.C. has an extensive public transportation system. You are coming to my Christmas party, right? Jenna's voice sounds loud and clear, as I'm reminded I'm talking on the phone. I don't know. You have to. It's like bestie code or something. Bring him with you. That's the thing. I'm not sure I'm ready for everyone to pry into the fact that we're together again, I say, even though Andy suggested we come clean. People are going to find out soon enough. She is right. Still, don't you think I should sit down and talk to everyone, not show up at a party with him on my arm? There is Ben to consider. Jenna's sigh is loud and dramatic. Ben's going through his own thing right now. I think some woman has crawled under his skin and turned him inside out. I don't even know who my brother is anymore. Oh, is it? Don't say her name and jinx it. We laugh for a few seconds before Jenna sobers. Really, Kate, you can't hide this. You're gonna have to be honest. I know. I just don't want to hear everyone's opinion. And what if Ben hates us for it? He was there. He was there for all of it. He watched me walk away. Are you back there again? No one hates you. I thought you've given up that guilt. That's not what you need while you're rebuilding your relationship. Did you just tell me he hinted at moving in together? Yes, and I don't know what to do. If I move, I'll have to get a car. It's a lot. You can always move back to Charleston and be close to me. I laugh a little before I tell her the truth about something. I can never move back to Charleston. All the old hurts and mistakes I made are there. I can never be settled there. But you will visit. Yes, I say, even though I wish I never had to. My parents, his parents, some of our best friends are lifers in Charleston. I may not be able to call it home, but it will always be home to my family and his. Winter-like weather continues to batter the city through early December. It isn't until the following Friday I get to see Andy again. There's a holiday party at his office tonight and one at the hospital tomorrow. I've packed a bag as I plan to spend the whole weekend with him. The Uber rides are costly, but cheaper and less of a hassle than maintaining a car. However, I have started to look at cars on the off chance I decide to move in with Andy. I'm dressed to impress in a subdued, sexy number that won't shock the doctors Andy works with, but won't age me unnecessarily either. I spent a fair amount of time with Mandy searching for the right dress. When I get to Andy's door, his expression says it all.
Jesus, Kate, I'm surprised the cabbie didn't kidnap you. That dress is...
good? He nods, and I lean in to kiss him. His arm snakes around my back as he draws me up against his hardening cock. Happy to see me? I ask with a smirk as I pull back slightly.
I'm always happy to see you.
He glances at the phone in his hand.
We could be fashionably late.
Or, I say, raising an eyebrow, we can be on time.
Kate.
I can hear the protest in his voice. I don't want the doctors you work with to think I'm the one causing you to be late. First impressions, remember?
Once they see you,
he says, stepping back and eyeing me up and down,
they will forgive me for being late. In fact, I'll probably get bonus points for showing up at all.
I can't help but laugh. How about I give you some attention on the ride over? His brows shoot up, and I give him a wide grin. He takes my bags and drops them on the table.
After you, my lady.
I giggle as he pats my butt on the way out. I love how carefree our relationship has gotten. And true to my word, I give him the promised happy ending on the ride to his office. My palms begin to sweat as we take the elevator up. He's explained to me that with the new laws surrounding the medical care for all, their office had to cut spending. The small holiday party is being held in-house to save money. Less money spent on frivolous things means more money in the hands of the doctors themselves. Still, they wanted to have the party, and the doctor Andy has been covering is coming with her new baby.
Kate, you have no reason to be nervous,
Andy says with an arm around my back. Easy for you to say. What if they don't like me? Andy stares at me.
I work with them. It's not like they are my family.
And isn't that the crux of the problem? And what will your family say when I show up with you at Christmas?
It will be fine, Kate.
The doors open, and too soon I'm ushered into a glass front office. There are a few people milling about. We don't have any more time to talk about the week to come. The doctors are friendly, as Andy introduces me, but it's the baby who steals the show. The infant is carefully passed around after hands are disinfected with liquid sanitizer. When it's my turn, I feel the tears begin to form in the back of my eyes. I want this. I want a baby and a family, and I want it with Andy. The possibility of this could be derailed depending on how our week goes. I know Andy wants to think that it will be okay, but I've broken Andy's heart once.
Kate,
Andy says. He glances to the woman in front of me, waiting to take the small bundle from my arms. I hand the baby off, and I immediately feel like something's missing. The tiny baby who smells like powder makes me want too much in a short few minutes. I sip at the glass of wine Andy hands me and try not to think so hard about a future I want and may not get. Later, as the party wraps up, one of the older doctors with only a small thatch of white hair that clings to the crown of his head speaks.
Well, Kate, what's the verdict?
I glanced up, confused by the question that's directed at me. Verdict?
We're all hoping Drew will stay with us. And the way he speaks of you, I think his decision largely depends on you.
I turn my head to the side and glare at Drew. He gives me a sheepish smile.
Actually, I haven't had a chance to talk to Kate about your offer yet.
Oh, the man says.
Sorry, we are all just so pleased with Drew's accomplishments so far. He will make a great addition to the team. And of course, a second office in D.C. will expand our client base.
D.C., I say to no one in particular. That sparks conversation all around me. Drew uses the opportunity to draw me down the hall away from everyone. He pulls me into an office and closes the door. Andy, what's going on? He takes my hands, and my heart begins to race.
I plan to talk to you about this later tonight. I didn't expect they would put me or you on the spot like this.
My eyes are wide because I don't know what he's about to do.
Kate, I love you, and I always have. You know this.
I nod. I'm so very afraid he'll get on one knee. I'm not sure I'm ready for that.
Rosalind is coming back part-time to the office. However, they want to bring me on full-time. To help justify the cost, they want to open a satellite office in D.C. I'll be there most of the time, but we'll have a couple of days in Baltimore a month, and we'll rotate hospital hours in both D.C. and Baltimore. It means I could move to D.C.
That's great, I say. His smile dips.
You don't seem happy.
It's not that. I'm just overwhelmed. It's a lot, but it sounds like a fantastic opportunity. Even I know the smile on my face is a little weak. I try to crank it up because isn't this what I've wanted? The delight on his face falls.
You don't want us to move in together.
I'm not saying that. I just need some time. He nods.
You're right. I've grown to enjoy the area. But I'll be honest with you. You sweeten the deal. If you don't want this, if you don't want me.
He stops, not finishing his thought. I want to tell him everything is great. The words are stuck in my throat for reasons that make me itch to run. I promised him I wouldn't. He takes my hand and opens the door. He leads me back to the main room as hugs are being doled out and coos are being made over the baby. I feel like I'm having an out-of-body experience. I can't explain what's come over me and why I'm not happy when moments ago I was dreaming of babies with Andy. The drive back to his place is quiet. We get undressed and do our nightly ritual without saying much. I know Andy is hurt, and I never meant to be the one to hurt him. It's almost awkward when we climb into bed. Still, he pulls me close.
Kate,
he says softly. Yes.
I feel the panic rising in me, unsure what he will say or ask of me. I want this shot at a future with you. You have all the reasons in the world to be scared, and I know you said you wouldn't run, but I won't hold you hostage. If you can't be with me, it will hurt like hell, but I would rather you say it.
I keep my clam trap shut at first. He lets out a long, suffering breath of air. I meet his pleading eyes. I'm scared. It's a truth he deserves to know.
What are you scared of?
Everything. I'm scared of how people will react when they find out. Mostly, I'm scared my heart can't handle breaking a second time.
No one else matters. Just you and I. And I swear, Kate, I won't break your heart.
You can't guarantee that. He doesn't counter, because he knows there is truth in my words. Instead, he wraps strong arms around me and holds me tight. He strokes my hair while I let out quiet sobs. When finally the tears ease and I can speak, I whisper the words. I love you.
I love you too.
He breathes the phrase, and I find myself searching and listening to the beat of his heart. It's a long time before I can sleep. Tomorrow is the party at the hospital. His future partners will be there. I need to have some answers for Andy in the morning, and I fear what I want. I don't think I'll be able to feel solid about our relationship until it's out in the open with our family and friends. That means I need to tell him about Jenna's party. No doubt Ben will be there. Chapter 28, Present. In his arms, I wake up feeling safe. I lay still, content in his comforting embrace. I want to memorize his smell, his touch, his love, so I'll never forget it. And I know it's the past that continues to haunt me, yet he's still here, even after my minor freakout over finding out he wants to stay in the area for me. When he begins to stir, I turn to face him. Good morning. He presses his lips to mine.
Morning.
I reach to twine my fingers in his hair. Your hair is getting long. He gives me an impish grin.
I know. You want to cut it for me?
I shake my head, knowing I'm dancing around the unspoken issue, so I push forward. About last night. He takes my hand and presses a soft kiss to my fingertips.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have sprung that on you, especially with everyone there watching.
It wasn't your fault, I say. He hadn't been the one to bring it up. And besides, I want you to stay. A cautious smile blossoms on his face.
Are you sure?
I am, but I hesitate, because this is the hard part. We have to tell our family and friends. As much as it scares me, it has to happen. He nods, and his expression sobers.
Are you going home for Christmas?
I'm going down for the week. His words don't falter, which makes me wonder if he's already thought about this.
We can tell everyone then. I have to work most of the week. I should make it into Charleston by Christmas Eve.
I remember something I haven't yet brought up. It seems both of us have been holding back just a little. Jenna's having a Christmas Eve party. He nods, like he already knew.
It's a good place to start.
His eyes hold me like an anchor, so I press forward. Ben. It's both a statement and question. I know he understands.
It will be fine.
I shake my head. Easy for you to say. No one will hate you. He's quick with a retort.
Kate, no one will hate you either. I'm surprised Jenna didn't crack and tell Ben about us already.
Frankly, I am too. He'll be mad we kept this from him.
Babe.
He kisses me softly.
We can't worry about everyone else's feelings. This is about us, and you are it for me, and you have been.
He clears his throat, only to cover his mouth with a fist and let out a cough. My body locks up as if I've been flash frozen. Slowly, I force the words out of my mouth. Are you okay? He nods, but coughs again.
It's nothing, a tickle in the back of my throat.
I say nothing. He's not stupid. He knows what's running through my head.
Kate, babe, it's the season for colds and flu. I see patients every day. They have germs. I'm okay, I swear. I probably shouldn't kiss you, though.
He gives me a teasing grin, but doesn't let me respond. He soothes my worried soul with tender touches and wondrous kisses on my body. I lose myself in feelings that aren't emotions. He makes me forget that life is fragile, that we are fragile. We spend a lazy morning in bed, and he hasn't coughed anymore. I've let the worry go for now. At some point, he gets up and makes us breakfast. I feel so spoiled, I show him my appreciation in all the ways that has him gripping my hair and calling out my name. I don't even know how we make it to the hospital's Christmas party later that evening. Andy holds my hand as we walk into the ballroom of the hotel next to the hospital. Convenient, I say to Andy as he ushers me through the front doors.
They wanted staff to be able to come over and be close if they're called back in case of an emergency.
The dress code isn't black tie. People come in a variety of outfits, from very casual to semi-formal. The black dress I'm wearing is somewhere in the middle. As I take in the room, which isn't as fancy as the balls I've been to over the past few months, the decor is nice and more comfortable than some pretentious places I've been. I'm not sure what to expect, but it isn't the warm welcome I get from Becca. Hi, Kate, isn't it? I smile. Andy is behind me speaking to some of his colleagues, and Becca is positively beaming. Before she can say anything else, a man not much taller than her comes over and slips an arm around her waist. Her face lights up, and I understand where her glow comes from. I couldn't be happier for her. A hand gently touches the small of my back, and I turn to the side to see Andy standing next to me. A little more than cordially, he says,
Becca, Frederick.
Becca gives Drew a megawatt smile, and Frederick matches her.
Drew,
he says.
And this must be,
says Frederick, the ginger, with a possessive arm around Becca. Kate, I say, holding out my hand.
Nice to meet you.
He gives me a business handshake, while Becca smiles at Drew. Frederick tells me I have you to thank for convincing him to ask me out. He says you gave him the push he needed to take the chance. Drew laughs, as if she's exaggerated the story.
He was almost there. I just got him to realize that sometimes it's good to take a risk.
His eyes brush over me, and I wonder if he thought I was a risk when I kept running from him. She steps in and gives Drew a quick friendly hug. I'm surprised when I feel no hint of jealousy. It's clear she's smitten with Frederick. Thanks. Then in almost a whisper, she adds, I think he could be the one. Her smile borders on shy as she steps back and lets Frederick put his arm around her. I start to calculate when this all happened, considering her bold statement of Frederick being her one. Only someone calls out the name Drew from across the room. We turn and see Desiree barreling toward us. She stops short when she sees me. Drew? I'm not sure why there is a question in her voice. I glance over my shoulder and see that Becca and Frederick have been roped into another conversation, so I don't feel so bad that we've rudely turned away from them.
Desiree, I'm surprised to see you here. This is a staff event.
Andy says questioningly, I'm on the board now. Her tone is brusque, and she's busy checking out all the places we touch as Andy has me tucked against his side. I hear that you might be moving to another hospital. She glances between us.
I'm moving to D.C. to be closer to Kate,
Andy says matter-of-factly. For a second, her eyes narrow before they open with wide-eyed fake glee. Congratulations. I hope to get a wedding invitation soon. She's probing, and I'm prepared with an answer, but Andy beats me to it.
We'll be sure to mail you one.
It's hard to hold back a snicker as her smile flattens out. I know she expected that he'd say something to contradict her. Instead, he's given her exactly what she doesn't want to hear. Great, I look forward to it. She spins on her heels and stalks away. I let the laugh come out that I've been holding back. That was brilliant. Too bad we have no invitation to send. Andy's magnetic blue eyes gaze into mine.
You never know.
My hand stills midair with the wine glass I've been holding. I'm not sure what to say to that.
True.
Another person calls, and we are pulled into another introduction and conversation. Later, I'm finally able to step away as a long-winded doctor draws Drew into a conversation with so many nonsensical five-syllable words, my head starts to spin. I've just picked up one of the yummy calamari appetizers when a woman steps into my personal space. Her blonde hair is carefully styled in an updo, but I recognize her as the one who couldn't keep her lips to herself and off of Drew.
You may have won this round, but if you manage to marry him, you'll still lose. Half of the doctors here cheat on their spouses with nurses and other staff. I mean, they spend more time with us than they do at home with their spouses.
Everything about her looks angry. I can't stop the quick retort that barrels out of my mouth. You realize that if you didn't walk around with a sneer on your face, any one of the single guys here tonight would ask you out. You're an attractive woman whose beauty is hidden behind hate and envy. A genuine smile and happy thoughts would go a long way toward getting a man that wants you. And a bit of advice, no man wants to be chased. Men like to do the chasing. I think of Haki Ho as I shake my head, feeling so sorry for the woman before me. I pivot and plow right into Andy. He must have come up while I was talking.
Kate.
My name is but a whisper from his sly and half-parted smile. He leans down and kisses me right in front of the woman and anyone else nearby to see. I still don't know her name, but I don't care either, especially while Andy is touching me. He puts an arm around me, and I turn back to face her, only she's stalking off before we can share any other words. I sure am one lucky woman. I glance up at the man I call mine. Andy appears mystified.
Why is that?
My boyfriend is like a superstar. He gives me a cheeky grin.
I'm lucky too.